8 a.m. haven't arrived. I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. Good morning, everyone. And we do not have a quorum yet, but I think we will begin. So if Representative Lean would move towards the table.
Sure. Give you one of those.
And when we do get a quorum, we will then make the proper motions. So welcome, Representative Lean, to your committee. And we'll move this later, but if you would go ahead and explain the bill, and I see you've got some testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, appreciate
Representative Lean, hold on. We now do have a quorum. So we're going to just do quick business here first before we start. So we've got Thursday, March 21st minutes to approve. Representative Leslie Gard moves approval of the March 21st, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on approval of the March 21st, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. All right, Representative Lean, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 293 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you very much.
And this bill, House File 293, would cut the combined net receipt tax rates for charitable gaming organizations. The current rates are 9%, 18%, 27%, and 36%, depending on how much the combined net receipts are for the organizations. This bill would establish new rates of 6%, 12%, 18%, and 24%, again, depending on how much the combined net receipts are for the organizations. The Department of Revenue Analysis estimates a cost of $30.4 million in fiscal year 20 and $37.4 million in fiscal year 23 for this bill. With charitable gaming revenue totaling $81 million in fiscal year 18, the tax cuts in this bill will still preserve the $36.9 million established as the general fund tax base for charitable gaming that was set up in the 2012 Vikings Stadium bill. The ultimate policy goal of this bill is to get more money back to the charitable organizations that operate these games to raise proceeds for good work in all of our communities across the state. Since fiscal year 2017, some charitable organizations around the state pay more in taxes than they do to the community causes they support. Because charitable gaming organizations are not able to deduct any business expenses, such as the cost of game supplies, rent, and employee wages, their effective rates can be roughly 7.5 times more than other businesses in Minnesota, 72% effective tax rates against the 9.8%. Mr. Chair, committee members, at this time I can stand for questions or allow testifiers to make comments.
Very good. Why don't we move to testifiers? So, welcome. Good morning. Let's introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alan Lund. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We're a 501c6 trade association representing licensed gaming in Minnesota. Licensed gaming in Minnesota is conducted by 1,140 charities. We conduct bingo, pull tabs, raffles, tip boards, paddle wheels to raise funds for our communities and missions. We have been a safety net in every corner of the state of Minnesota for 74 years. I am here today to speak in favor support of House File 293. On average, you give us a dollar, and at the end of the day, we're going to give you back 85 cents. That leaves us with 15 cents. Our expenses take up 7.5 cents of that, leaving us with 7.5 cents. We pay 4 cents to the state, leaving us with 3.5 cents for our community and missions. We are allowed no deductions of any kind. We pay the gambling tax on every dollar that we take to the bank. As a group, in fiscal year 2017, we started paying more to the state than we had for our communities and missions. In fiscal year 2018, 340 of us paid more to the state than we had for our community and missions. Here are five examples of what is going on in charitable gaming today in Minnesota. St. Paul Fire Relief. In fiscal 2018, they paid the state $650,000 while netting $150,000 for their missions. They paid 4.3 times more to the state than they had for their missions. The St. Paul Park American Legion, they only have one site. They increased their sales the past three fiscal years by $900,000. They gained $3,000 from that $900,000 sales increase. The state netted $48,000 from that $900,000 sales increase. In effect, a 16 times increase over what the charity had. The St. Paul Park American Legion has been in as a legion for 98 years. The gambling manager at that legion tells me that he believes they have 2 to 3 more years and they will be throwing in the towel. The Osseo Lions, of which I am a member, in February, we lost $2,300 on our gambling account while paying $19,000 to the state of Minnesota. The Claremont Area Chamber of Commerce, in the past 3 fiscal years, they have increased their sales by $2.2 million. Their net permissions has increased by $25,000 from $30,000 to $55,000, while their taxes have increased sixfold from $21,000 to $123,000. The Northern Lakes Lightning Youth Hockey Association, in fiscal 2018, they had $114,000 permissions while paying the state $236,000. In fiscal year 2019, they are in pace to have $113,000 for their missions, while paying the state $265,000. This is a net loss of $1,000 to the charity and a net gain to the state of $29,000. We understand paying taxes on our gaming income. We do not understand paying up to 7 times what a business pays in Minnesota. Our net per dollar wagered has decreased by 30% the past 6 fiscal years, going from 5 cents to 3.5 cents per dollar wagered. To us, the intent of the 2012 stadium bill was for charities to continue to pay the $36.9 million into the general fund and to pay the $31 million a year on the stadium bonds. This fiscal year, we are on pace to pay $95 million to the state of Minnesota. If there is no change in our current tax structure, at some point the charities are going to say that the reward of conducting charitable gaming is no longer greater than the work or the risk. We are asking for your help and support for us to be able to continue to serve our communities and missions. I thank you for your time, and we ask for your support of House File 293.
Thank you very much. Just, Mr. Lund, trying to think back to 2012 in the Viking Stadium deal and so forth. So what happened to the rates? Like, so we've got current rates of 9, 18, 27, and 36. What happened at that time? Or go ahead,
Mr. Chair. Thank you. So actually, the very smart change on that 2012 bill is that we started being taxed on money that we actually brought to the bank versus sales. We were taxed on 100% of the money that we touched when we gave back 85%. So we were taxed differently, totally differently at that point. So that was a very good change, that we got taxed on the money that we actually got to use to pay bills, taxes, and donations. And that's when the new rates came into effect, the 9, the 18, 27, and 36. And at that point, we had believed, and my predecessors had said, that 36% would at some point come to roost. And because that, we saw that, because how it happens is that the effective rate, if you're paying 50% of your money to expenses, wages, rent, cost of your games, your tax rate is 72%. So it all changed in 2012.
Okay. So Mr. Lund, did the rates change? What were the rates before 2012?
So the rate the rate was like 3 to 4% of what your sales were. And then you paid on every ticket you had purchased, and you would get a rebate 6 months into the new fiscal on the unsold tickets. So it was a very convoluted. It was totally different than it is today.
Okay. So, Mr. Lund, the thought is then at the time, you thought things were probably going to be okay, but it hasn't resulted in that. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Lund?
So there were actually 2 bills in play at that time. One of them that the top rate was going to be 27%, and the one that got enacted was the 36%. We supported the 27%. We believe that the 36% was going to be too much for the charities to bear.
I got you. Very good. Thank you. Questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, and I think that I would presume that the large number of us that are serving have heard from our nonprofits and our communities, and I'm no exception. But I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, does this bill, does Representative Lean's bill have a possibility of becoming law? I mean, seeing the targets that were set yesterday with the majority, there is a lot of spending. Can we even afford this going forward? Because I know I've heard from the American Legion in Delano, and frankly, a lot of the volunteers that do the work are, like this gentleman, just simply can't sustain it and don't think they can continue offering charitable gambling because it's just not worth it. So I had a bill like this. I think Representative Detmer had a bill, and there's probably numerous bills very similar to this, Representative Lean's bill. So does this have a possibility?
Well, Representative McDonald, I think you've asked two questions. Does it have a possibility of being in this bill? And the second, becoming law, which could be totally two different things, as you know. So I won't speculate on either at this point. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lund, for your work. Do you, by chance, have a printout of the taxes paid by all of our charitable gambling organizations? I think we used to receive one of those from Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative, that is available on the Gambling Control Board's website.
Thank you very much, and I'll look it up. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just a point of clarification, too. The stadium has been referred to twice, I believe, here as the Viking Stadium. I think it's the People's Stadium. But that being said, Representative McDonald mentioned the targets, and quite frankly, in the targets, there appears to me anyway to be a shift out of the stadium reserve to $48.7 or $48.8 million. Do you have any clarity on that? Or maybe Chair Carlson can address that.
Maybe Ms. Templin. Yeah, I think that was in the base also, so I don't know if there's any changes made in the budget resolution, but Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I did see that there was a negative $47.9 million shift. In talking with Mr. Marks about that, that is just it's current law. It's showing the change from fiscal 2021 biennium to the fiscal 18-19 biennium, which is a $47 million gain. So there's no changes to current law, and there's no changes in the House budget resolution to the stadium reserve.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then does that money just stay in the stadium reserve?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
So. All right, Mr. Lund, thank you. So, Representative Lean, do you have other testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I believe we do have somebody from the St. Paul Fire Department here.
Very good. Good morning. Welcome, and please state your name for the committee.
Good morning, I'm Glenn Jenkins. I'm the gambling manager with the St. Paul Firefighters. I apologize, I'm a firefighter, so I'm not very polished. So if I do something wrong, just tell me.
You're good.
I took over charitable gaming for our local, our union, roughly a decade ago. At that time, we were able to provide 5 scholarships in the St. Paul area for kids to go to college, technical college, whatever. That's all gone now. I can no longer afford to do that. This last 2 years, I made it my mission to focus on youth athletics and people that are sick. I mean, those are the two things that firefighters are really passionate about, is getting kids off the street, giving them something positive to do. And we supported a church on the east side of St. Paul, and they had a program called the Harvest Youth Movement, where they took kids from the inner city on the east side of St. Paul. It got them out of the city, put them up north camping, fishing, getting outdoors, provided them with book bags, things to go to school, to help give these kids a leg up, give these kids a head start. And I supported the program for this gentleman. And about 4 months ago, I had to stop. I could no longer do it. It was either I shut down business and get rid of everything else, or I continue to do this. And as a result, the Harvest Youth Movement has now shut down and it is no longer functioning. There's no feeling like that for me that I can ever explain to you of the horrible. Some of these kids have gone on to the military, college. They've told me that they would have never had these opportunities if it hadn't been for this program. And we've had to stop doing that. This is, I think, my third or fourth time coming in here, talking to everybody. And in that time, I guess I'm kind of naive being a firefighter. I don't really pay attention to what you guys do. I apologize, but, you know, my job's fairly simple. You know, fire, put it out, you go home. And in that time, I've been told that, and through charitable gaming, I'm irresponsible for how I'm spending money. I'm making more money now than I've ever made, and I'm being irresponsible. And I don't see how donating money in the community is being irresponsible. The more money, we're a fairly large organization, and when you talk about the tiered tax system, we get to that 36% roughly in about a month and a half into the year. So even though I make more money, I spend more money on taxes than I ever have, faster than everybody else. Along with that comes more supplies, more everything. So to say that I've made more money, yes, I have, but it all goes out. I mean, the only people that are really making money here are the people that serve us, the accountants that do our audits, the state of Minnesota through taxes, the suppliers. I can't charge more than $1 for a dollar pull tab. I don't think anybody would buy. And that's never gone up. That price has never gone up once since they've started charitable gaming. It's $1 pull tab, $2 pull tab. You can't force people to pay more than $1 for $1. And so I have two options. The first one is to come in here and try to get some relief. I'm not trying to stop the People's Stadium. I'm not trying to stop money going to the general fund. But as you heard from Mr. Lund, $95 million this year, that's a lot of extra money that could be put into the community that has a direct impact on each one of your constituents. Every day, I would be willing to bet there isn't one person in this room that hasn't been affected by charitable gaming in one fashion, whether it be youth athletics, sickness, something. All we're asking for is relief. You know, I'm willing to pay my fair share. I'm willing to do what I need to do, but we need help.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Jenkins? Thank you very much. Thanks for what you do. Mr. Representative Lee? There you go. Good morning. Please state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Tony Chesick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. We are a nonprofit trade association that represents retail liquor license holders in the state of Minnesota. I'm here today in support of Representative Lean's bill to provide tax relief to charities that in most cases operate in bars, restaurants throughout Minnesota. There is a very close relationship between bars and restaurant owners and the charities that operate charitable gaming in their establishments. This close relationship exists because charity's customers are the bar's customers. The charity provides some entertainment for the bar customers, and the bar provides location for people to meet, mix with friends, and have a little entertainment and contribute to their communities. The health of charities is extremely important to the bar owners. If charities are unable to continue to be a business because of the heavy burden of state taxes, that is bad for the charitable purpose, the charities that they serve, and is bad for the bars and their communities. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask at this time, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 293? Seeing none, all right. Members, questions? Representative Lean, any closing words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I appreciate hearing this bill today. I do also want to enter into the record that we do have a letter of support from the president of the Northeast Lions in Northeast Minneapolis, so we can get that in the record. And other than that, I just appreciate your time and attention on the bill today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 293 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Lean. Also, members, in your packets, you've got eight bills that were referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. Those should be in your packets. Next, Representative Detmer. I don't know if I see him right now, but we will move A lot of times members have bills up in other committees, so we will move forward. We have Representative Davidson. Okay, Representative McDonald. So next up is House File 1302 we'll take. And so Representative McDonald moves House File 1302 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And there is an A2 amendment. Representative McDonald moves the A2 amendment. And staff, is there someone that would want to address the A2 amendment? Or
Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have our testifier that could easily mention the amendment and describe what it pertains.
Okay, so we're on the amendment right now. So thank you. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. And just this bill is a repeat from last year, and the A2 amendment just makes sure that it's the same language as last year. When I explain the bill in total, I'll
Very good.
Get into it.
All right. Any questions on the A2 amendment? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A2 amendment is adopted. Very good. So, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that we have a captive audience today to talk about captive insurance companies. So with this bill proposes a new method to qualify what an insurance company and what is a taxable captive insurance company. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifier to explain the bill.
Very good. Ms. Rowan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for those who may not be familiar with them, captive insurance companies are companies that are wholly owned and controlled by their insureds, and they're a very legitimate tool for larger companies to manage their insurance costs, but captives have also been used to inappropriately exclude income from the franchise tax. So in the 2017 special session, the Department of Revenue included language in the tax bill to create a path for requiring naughty captives, as I call them, to pay the franchise tax. And but the problem with that language was it didn't clearly distinguish between commercial insurance companies and captives, and then naughty captives and good captives. So we spent a significant portion of last year working with Joel Michael and the Department of Revenue to find a test that clearly made those distinctions. And so with the A2 amendment, that is what you have in front of you. The first test in the bill distinguishes between captives and commercial insurers, and it does that in two ways. First, it looks as if the captive is licensed as a captive. We don't do that here, but other states do. And the second part of the test is looks at how much of their premium is actually directed at the affiliated group of companies that it belongs to, because that's what a captive is. So the second part of the test says if less than 50% of their premiums come from outside of the unitary group, then it's probably a captive insurer and not a commercial insurer. So once you've established that a captive, that insurance company, that the captive is actually a captive, the second part of the test distinguishes between a legitimate captive and a naughty captive. And basically it does that by determining determining how closely it behaves to a commercial insurance company. And so the test in the bill says that if the captive pays less than 0.5% of its premium in premium taxes, or if less than 50% of its income comes from premiums, then its income would be included in the unitary group because it's not really behaving like an insurance company like it's supposed to. The rest of the bill deletes the extraneous language from that was enacted in 2017. So I would like to thank Department of Revenue for all the time that they have put into working on this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Any questions from members of Ms. Rowan? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Marone, could you just explain why on the amendment we go from 80% to less than 50%? Because that's a pretty big shift.
Yeah.
Ms. Rowan?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the 80% was something that we had discussed with revenue in the past. They didn't like the 80%. And when I had the bill drafted initially this year, I mistakenly used the wrong draft. So the 50% takes us back to the agreed-to language with the department. And it's basically just a shift in how you look at it. Initially, we were saying if 80% of the premiums were from inside the unitary group, then it was truly a captive. But the department felt that was too high of a threshold, and they were much more comfortable with less than 50% coming from entities outside of the unitary group.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? If not, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1302? See none. Representative McDonald, anything more on your captive bill?
No, Mr. Chair, other than I'm just very pleased that we're all informed about, like we were last year and the previous, about legitimate and naughty captives. And I think we're all a little bit wiser today than we were yesterday.
And what more can we ask for in the Tax Committee?
Amen. Yes.
Representative McDonald renews his motion to lay over House File 1302 as amended for possible inclusion in the tax on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Pittner is not here. So, Representative Erickson, we'll go to House File 1486.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1486 on behalf of Representative Davids for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. And there is an A1 amendment. And I'm going to have Mr. Clayman talk about Representative Erickson, will you move the A1 amendment?
I will move the A1 amendment.
All right, very good. And Mr. Clayman, if you would tell us what the A1 amendment does.
We don't have the amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, the A1 amendment is being passed out as we speak. So let's just hold off for just a second until members get that.
And Mr. Chair and members,
Representative Erickson,
I believe that this amendment is to clarify some concerns that the Department of Revenue has. So Mr. Clayman will explain the detail.
Very good. Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, members, the A1 amendment, there's really two sections to it. The first section of the amendment is a new paragraph C. That's on lines 1.3 to 1.6 of the amendment, and that is intended to address a situation where there is a partnership that does not have nexus with Minnesota. And then the issue there is to what extent are there reporting obligations for that partnership that doesn't have nexus with Minnesota for a resident partner. And so that language intends to address that, or that language would address that situation. And the language, that new paragraph C, that's actually taken from a model act that the MTC, the Multi-State Tax Commission, came up with. And so that language is the same or very similar to what's in the model language. The second piece of the amendment tries to address or would address a situation where you have a tax avoidance situation where a resident might use a partnership structure, a partnership structure that doesn't have nexus in order to avoid tax as a Minnesota resident. I guess to make one other clarification on this bill, I believe this committee heard the partnership bill that was part of the Department of Revenue's policy and technical proposed changes. One difference between that bill and this bill is that the Department of Revenue's approach would apply the payment reporting requirements on both direct and indirect partners, whereas this bill does not put that requirement on the indirect partners. And so what this amendment does is it addresses situations where you may have some issues that arise because of that. And if I've misstated any of this, I'm sure there are testifiers here that could correct some of those details. But in short, that's what this amendment does.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Klayman, does the second part of this amendment, is there, it gives the commissioner the ability to make the final determination. Are there any other recourses for appeal?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I believe that certainly any assessment decision that's made by the Commissioner of Revenue would be appealed through normal channels, so administrative appeals or petitions to the tax court.
Right,
so those should still be available to a taxpayer subject to the determination.
Very good. Any other questions on the A1 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. So, all right, Representative Erickson, we have your bill in proper form.
So, Mr. Chair and members, to simplify this is an addition to a partnership tax policy in our statutes. That's why the number is bracketed. And basically, it is aligning our tax of partnerships with the federal government's taxes, and would say that instead of auditing and submitting your taxes as individuals, it's done by the partnership. So Minnesota would gain income on this rather than have an apportionment. And I guess I have a testifier here to help out.
Very good. Good morning. Please state your name for the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society. The CPAs support House File 1486 as amended and the changes it makes to Minnesota's partnership audit regulations. These changes are needed as a result of the federal changes that Congress passed back in 2015 and are effective for tax years beginning January 1 of 2018. In January of this year, tax administrators developed model legislation to reduce the potential for substantial variances across the nation as the states consider legislation to address this. House File 1486 follows the model language developed by the Multi-State Tax Commission and would promote streamlined reporting, enable taxpayers to report adjustments more quickly and accurately, and reduce the administrative burden. It would also allow partnerships to pay assessments at the entity level, or if they choose to push that out to the individual partners. In addition, it also creates a uniform, simplified method to apply the results of a partnership audit conducted by the IRS under the new procedures, provides certainty, consistency, and uniformity by incorporating changes needed for states to conform to the new federal partnership audit structure. It would establish a more uniform standard in reporting adjustments for all taxpayers, would also address changes made to the federal audit procedures that impact state-specific issues such as residency and apportionment. Another important point is that it would create consistent application of the statute of limitations for assessing tax or filing for a refund resulting from a federal audit adjustment. House File 1486 allows the partnership to only consider the direct partner when it pays the assessment, as Mr. Klayman referenced. If the partnership has a tax-exempt partner as a direct partner, for example, this partnership will not owe income on that partner's share of the assessment. It also provides that the partnership will only need to consider the residency status of individuals who are direct partners and would not be required to consider the residency of individuals who are indirect partners that may be several tiers removed from the partnership structure. This distinction is important because while a partnership with a tiered structure will have residency information with respect to its direct partners, the partnership generally will not have such information with respect to indirect partners. Without the information, it would be impossible for the partnership with a tiered structure to elect the partnership pay option for Minnesota income taxes to be paid on behalf of its partners. It would increase the administrative compliance burden on the Department of Revenue and the partnerships. And finally, another important provision would limit the assessment to additional taxes from the audits to only Minnesota amounts related to the federal audit adjustment if the regular Minnesota statute of limitations had expired. If the IRS resulted in a refund, the taxpayer is also limited to filing a refund claim related only to those federal adjustments. As Mr. Klayman referenced, the language in House File 2169 is a little bit different than what we see in House File 1486, and the MNCPA looks forward to continuing the discussion with the department to come up with the language that's acceptable and workable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Fragnito? All right. Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the audience? And I think the department wants to testify on this, but is there anyone from the audience, not counting the department at this point, that would like to testify for or against House File 1486? All right. Seeing none, the department would come forward.
Mr. Chair and members, while the department comes forward, there is a document in our packet from the Council of State Taxation that spells out their support and their opposition to 2169, but their support of 1486.
Very good. So thank you, Representative Erickson, and that is in your packets. Very good. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Melissa Tape. I'm an attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. While the department has a variety of thoughts regarding the bill as drafted, I am going to focus the department's testimony today on just three items. Two of the three items are drawn from important drafters' notes included in the Multi-State Tax Commission's report of the hearing officer, and one is a draft from a number of options included in the MTC model for states to choose between. First, an author's note to the MTC model on federal partnership audits specifically recognizes valid concerns raised during the drafting process about the opportunity of the partnership pays election to be used to shift income or avoid state taxation, specifically relating to indirect tiered partners. According to the MTC hearing officer report, this risk is mitigated through the ability of states to exercise general authority to challenge structures that lack economic substance. As testified in committee last week, Minnesota does not have the statutory authority necessary to disregard transactions that have no business purpose other than the sole purpose of avoiding state taxation. In addition to economic substance, the MTC model also includes additional safeguards that are not included in this bill. For example, one safeguard requires that partnerships making the partnership pays election have nexus with Minnesota. This is an important safeguard because if partnerships without nexus are not excluded from the election, the state may lack nexus over the partnership with a direct or indirect partner residing in the state. Since the bill sources the adjustments at the partnership level and does not look through to partnership residency, the nexus requirement ensures that a partnership without nexus or 0% apportionment cannot make the election, which would result in resident indirect partners paying 0% on adjustments. Another drafter's note recognizes that the model may potentially have different revenue impacts in different states. In some cases, the tax paid under the model may be less than state's current law. This happens because the model taxes indirect or tiered partners based on the apportionment percentage of the partnership rather than 100% of the adjustment for resident income. The research estimate from the department describes the impact specific to Minnesota. This morning we received the author's amendment and would like some time to review the language. The department will continue to have conversations to support the process as necessary. At this time, I would be happy to answer any questions related to the technical aspects of the bill.
Thank you. Ms. Tape, any questions for the department? If not, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, any questions for the author or anything more on this bill, House File 1486? If not, Representative Erickson, any last words?
Mr. Chair and members, on behalf of Representative Davids, I would recommend support of this proposal as amended and renew my motion that House File 1486 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Very good. So we're going to move back to House File 294 and Representative Fabian. Welcome to your committee, Representative Fabian. Would you like to move House File 294?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to move House File 294 for possible inclusion.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under current law, the state does allow for exemptions on items purchased at festivals and fairs and carnivals and so forth. We heard some of the concerns expressed earlier today in testimony about the charitable gambling. What we're trying to do here is now in this bill is to exempt from sales tax the materials and the equipment that's needed to provide charitable gaming at these different places. And we have a testifier here that can explain it more fully.
Very good. Welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director, Allied Charities of Minnesota. And we are here today to ask for your support of House File 294. The gambling tax to the charities is the main tax that we pay, and it is to be in lieu of all other taxes. We currently today pay sales tax on our paper games that we purchase that we then sell to our patrons, and also on the revenue share that we have on our electronics. We believe that that is a double taxation, and that tax should be changed, that our games are now exempt from that tax. It would the revenue estimate came in at about $3 million. That is money that does not go into the stadium fund. It goes into the general fund. So it would be, while not our main issue for tax relief, it would be very nice that we're only paying the taxes once.
Gotcha. Thank you, Mr. Lund. Any questions for Mr. Lund on House File 294? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 294? Seeing none, Representative Fabian, any further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a really good bill. I support Representative Detmer and his attempts to try to help out our charitable gambling establishments and get more money into our communities. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay over House File 294 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. All right, or the tax bill. Any announcements? All right, so Representative Joaquim.
First, I have to apologize for being late, but one announcement is I'd like to just congratulate our Hopkins High School boys basketball team for also winning the state championship this weekend to join our girls.
Representative Joaquim, every week you have some announcement to make, so very good. Representative Brand.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention the Minnesota State Mankato Mavericks just won a pretty important hockey game on Saturday night, so I just also wanted to point that out.
Representative Brand, who did they defeat?
Well, they defeated another team, obviously.
Oh, yes. Representative Fabian, anything to add
well,
here?
Well, Mr. Chair, more importantly, they got a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, too, in their regional. There's three schools from Minnesota that have got number one seeds. Reminds me of the days back in the day when the WCHA was going so strong, and it still is, but it's a great time of the year.
Right, yes. And I do miss the old WCHA.
Especially the fighting, I bet, right?
Yeah, that's right. All right, members, thank you, and we are adjourned.